You are listening to The Kevin Smith Show.
Comments and views expressed on The Kevin Smith Show are those of the people that make them and do not necessarily reflect the views of Kevin Smith, The Kevin Smith Show, or its affiliates or sponsors.
Hi, folks, and welcome to The Kevin Smith Show. Whoever you are, wherever you may be, all around this gorgeous place we call Earth, thanks for being here at The Kevin Smith Show. And for those of you joining us for the very first time, welcome aboard. I'm glad you're here. We have some interesting news from an unusual source. You know, we normally talk about UFOs, we talk about ghosts, we talk about EVPs, we talk about extraterrestrial space exploration, but we also talk about futuristic science. And who would have thought that a company that's been around for 156 years would be involved in something really futuristic? But the Steinway Piano Company is. Steinway Piano Company inhabits their factory buildings are in Queens, New York, and they are about a century old. So, you know, this has been around a while. But Steinway has installed the world's largest, most advanced solar cooling system. And for the purpose of cooling their factories and dehumidifying the factories for their precision pianos. Some say those are the best pianos in the world. Personally, I concur. That's exciting, isn't it? They've invested $875,000 in this project, and pretty exciting for them to be taking this very futuristic step. To be such an old, established kind of a company. So my hat is off to them. There's a big UFO conference each year in Laughlin, Nevada. It's coming up February 22nd through 28th, and it's going to have all kinds of people there speaking, people that you know, Paula Harris, Ed Grimsley, Wendell Stevens, Jim Mars, Robert Dean, Stanton Friedman, Michael Sala. I mean, this is like the granddaddy of all UFO conferences. If you can make it, you need to go online and register and get out there and visit the UFO conference February 22nd through the 28th. Now, I've got something pretty exciting to tell you that's all right here. Expeditions TV is sponsoring a really neat giveaway. Now, we worked right up until showtime to get the video of this so you could see it. It's still not working right. We'll have to work on it tomorrow. But the what's on the video is this. Jerry Wills, as you know, is an explorer and does a whole lot of work down in South America. And so he's picked up a really beautiful tapestry from Urcos Island, and there's going to be a way for you to get it free. Now, there's not like 1,000 of these and everybody's going to get one. No, it's not like that. There's one, but there's going to be a way for you to possibly win this, all right? And we will announce that when we have the video ready to go, okay? So I've got the video. I just didn't have the time to get it processed right and get it into a format that I could show you tonight. So that's coming. Be sure you pay attention to that tomorrow night. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey, and we will join her online. She will join us online here in just a moment, right after this break. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey. Christine Dickey may be already known to you from her articles that appear over at Alien Seeker News and perhaps elsewhere. She is a UFO ET experiencer or abductee. I'll let her tell us how she classifies that in just a moment. She investigates UFO sightings and reports and has photographed some interesting things, very interesting things in the skies, and is here to talk about it all. Now, we want to make clear that Christine Dickey is speaking for Christine Dickey, and she is not speaking on behalf of any organization or group. She is speaking for Christine Dickey. Welcome to the show, Christine.
Well, thank you for having me.
Christine, do you say that you are an abductee? Do you say that you're a UFO experiencer? Or how do you term that?
Well, I've never considered myself an abductee. I've always considered myself a contactee.
Okay, now what's the difference?
Well, abductee, to me, that means somebody who is taken against their will. Certainly, I have not been. I've always been up and very willing participant.
Okay. And tell us about, before we get into the photographs, let's just dive into that first experience years ago where you saw a UFO just hovering above the roadway in front of you.
Well, actually, there were three UFOs lined up at about 45 degrees. This was in Wyoming in 1981, July 2nd, and I was working along with a partner for Black Cat Fireworks, and we were leaving Rawlins, Wyoming, where they were headquartered, one evening around 11 o'clock at night with a pickup truck full of fireworks in the back, and we were headed east on Highway 80 towards Laramie, and about 20 minutes outside of Rawlins, I was in the middle seat, and I looked up and I saw three really bright objects. And I said to my friend Pat, I said, "Pat, look at those stars." And I no sooner got done saying that when the center object came straight for our windshield. I thought we were done. And we pulled the truck over to the side of the road and stopped. And when I yelled, "It's going to ram us," because I thought, no way is that thing going to stop, it actually stopped in midair and floated very slowly down to the pavement, to the road.
How far out in front of you was this object when it did that?
Maybe 100, 150 feet at the most.
Not far.
No, it was very close. And it was as big as a house, very large, and all you could see was an extremely bright light. It was like looking into a point blank into a magnesium flare. It was very bright, very hard to look into.
Okay, and what did your friend say about all this?
Well, actually, Pat had been having ongoing contact for quite some time, so this was not unusual for him. There were, like I said, there were three objects, and the object to the to our left, or towards the north, a jet out of Warren Air Force Base was pursuing that object, and I started watching that for a while. And now you have to realize there was no moon out that night, but the whole area was lit up like daytime.
Okay.
And this object to the north of our position, all of a sudden it looked like the jet had just stopped in midair. And I thought, what is it doing? You know, it's just, and what I realized is that the UFO had moved so fast that it made the jet look like it had stopped.
Okay. All right. Now, at what time of the day was this?
Well, this is about 11:20 towards 11:30 at night now.
Okay.
And my first instinct after I focused back on the object in front of us, my son was 5 years old at the time, and he was sleeping on the seat next to me, and I started climbing over him. I was going to get out, and I wanted to see this thing. I didn't want to walk up to it, but I wanted to stand in front of the truck and let them know that I was ready to go. So Pat stopped me. He said, wait till you're invited. And I said, well, isn't this an invitation? I mean, what do you call this? You know? So next thing I'm watching the object on the other side of us is to the south of our position, and it was skimming the hills and the mountains there, keeping equidistant from the ground at all time as if it was flying under the radar. So when I looked back at the object in front of us, now you have to realize this thing is as big as a house, and we're staring right into it. And all of a sudden, this thing, with the click of your finger, it was gone. It didn't take off. It didn't leave. It just vanished. And I remember feeling really, really sad because I wanted to go with them. I don't know if you can believe that, but I really felt a loss at that point. But, Pat?
Did you feel like maybe this was a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity and it had just passed you by?
No.
Okay.
No, because ever since then I have been having sightings and...
Yeah, but I mean, at the time when it took off.
Oh, I felt mm-hmm. like I had been left.
Mm-hmm.
I was just very sad. And
were you able, you said it was a very bright light. Were you able to see anything but light? Were you able to see the form of a craft or anything?
No, nothing. At least not consciously.
Mm-hmm.
Pat did say later on, after I call him, every once in a while I'll call him and I'll say, do you remember that? And we'll talk about it a little bit. And he said, we went inside that thing, and he remembers I was taken to one room and he was taken to another. And in dreams, I've had some flashbacks of conversation and what the ETs look like. And I went under hypnosis and actually recalled just bits of information, not anything in a lot of detail. But I got to tell you, they looked just like us. I do remember they were blonde, blue-eyed, and basically when I looked at them, they were seated, so I don't know how tall they were, although they looked like average height to me.
Okay, so they didn't have a diminutive stature.
No, not at all. They look very, very human, except that they were very, they were better looking than the average person would be. I mean, they were.
Oh,
very,
well, that
very,
they must be my race then.
Excuse me?
They must be my race then.
They were.
Yeah, I see. You're at a loss for words now.
I was going to say they look Pleiadian, Nordic.
Uh huh.
You know that type of description.
So there weren't any with bald heads?
Not that I could see.
Not my people. Okay. Well, and I don't mean to make light of it. I that's not why I'm joking. I'm joking about me. but now, when this happened, do you recall anything strange, I don't know, a time loss or any other kind of...
Yeah, there was a time loss. There was about, when we got back to Laramie, now this was about an hour and 20-minute drive for us, and mm-hmm. we we should have got to Laramie at approximately 1:30 at the latest, and we got there about after 3 in the morning.
Uh-huh.
So there was about a 2-hour loss of time.
And did your friend remember everything that happened during that time?
He remembered. Like I said, this is not the first time for him that this had happened, and he remembered in quite a bit of detail. I remember later, I remember sitting next to him in the craft talking to these blonde people, and I remember one of them looking at me as if he was very, very concerned about something, and I said to him, "Don't worry, everything's going to be all right." And I assume I know what that means, but not 100% sure.
Mm-hmm. Now, this may seem silly, but I'm just curious. Can you remember how they were dressed?
Yeah. The one that I remember talking to was he had a white robe with a red cloak. And that I remember very clearly. And I've heard that description before from other people about the white robes and red cloaks. I heard Joe Lewell say that just recently up in Phoenix.
Mm-hmm.
So.
And did they describe for you what was the purpose of them having you on their ship?
I don't recall the purpose, although I know I was in a situation at the time they did not want me in, and I, that's why I said to them, "Don't worry, everything's going to be all right," because I knew what to do mm-hmm. to rectify the situation.
Okay.
So.
And whenever they let you go, did they give you any sort of instructions or any kind of a command or any sort of a mission or marching orders?
No, and the thing is, I can't remember a lot of detail. Like I said, I'm sure there was, in fact, Leo Sprinkle and I have talked about this before, and he said, "Look, when you're ready to remember, it'll make sense." I know recently studying Zachariah Sitchin and the Anunnaki, a lot of this is really starting to make a lot of sense.
Do you think these were Anunnaki?
Very possibly. Very mm-hmm. possibly. And the reason I say that is because now we have to go back a few more years before this event, and I was having dreams of being a pilot and mining on the moon and taking the ore. This is before I ever heard of Zachariah Sitchin. Then taking the ore onto Mars and working on Mars and, like I said, being a pilot. And I remember one of the things that happened while I was there was we were looking out a building through the window, and we could see a large planet approaching Mars. And my job was to take children, scientists, important people off the surface of Mars and transport them to Earth. Now, I remember it must have been the last shuttle was leaving, and we were lifting off, and people were crying and screaming to be taken aboard because they were going to die. Now, I can only assume that the catastrophe that they were facing was the fact that Nibiru was coming into the gravitational field of Mars and pretty much was destroyed.
And I want to make clear, you just told us that these are dreams that you had in the past.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And these were dreams I had ever since I was very young until 19, I believe I went under hypnosis with Dr. Sprinkle around 1982.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, the dreams stopped. It was like a release from all of that, and that was the end of it.
What do you make of that?
Well, like I said, I had no idea at that time. I had not heard of Zachariah Sitchin. I didn't know about his books. I was living at 10,000 feet in the Colorado Rockies. pretty isolated up there. And so in the last couple of years, I started reading his Zachariah Sitchin's books, and I realized that there was a connection there, that what I had been experiencing was either, number one, a past life experience, or possibly, number two, a downloading of information.
Have you come to any conclusion as to which one it is?
Well, I personally feel that it's very likely that it was a past life experience, and it makes perfect sense to me, and I've heard of this in other people's lives. Jerry Wills, for one, says that he, I guess he is a reincarnation of, I believe, and I apologize, Jerry, if I get this wrong, I thought he was a reincarnation of one of the Roswell Grays. Is that right?
I don't know.
Okay, so, but in my case, I was an Anunnaki worker who probably died on Earth, and once an ET dies on the planet, other than their home planet, I think they're stuck there until they're taken back somehow or whatever.
All right, so what do you think was in your mind as you look back on this experience, the one where you were driving toward Laramie and you saw the three UFOs and then there's missing time and you were on board the ship? What do you think the purpose of that is?
I'm not sure, except I can only guess, and my guess is the fact that they are coming back, they are returning, and they're trying to prepare some, at least some people, for that event.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as we get closer to 2012, I have a source who does Bible code research, and says that the Anunnaki are supposed to start landing next year in the Middle East.
So now that, I have to tell you, that's the first time I've heard that one.
Mm-hmm.
Next year. Well, now that's going to upset an apple cart or two, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't know if I should give the date, but the date we got was around March 11th of next year.
Well, if that happens, that is going to really upset an apple cart or two, I can tell you.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to, you know, I'm not really sure folks in the Middle East are ready for visitors from space next year. It may take just a little.
The Middle East aren't ready for anybody.
Well, now, some are, but I mean, you know, generally speaking, it's really, really, I think, going to be quite an amazing thing for them. If these big spaceships start setting down,
you know,
is this supposed to be
all these major religions around the world, including Muslim and Judaism and Christianity and all this stuff? But you know, and we all talk about God and we all worship God and angels and all this stuff. But you know, when it comes right down to it, and they start coming here, we're not ready for them. I don't believe we are.
So you think it'll be a pretty upsetting kind of a situation?
Well, at least in the beginning, I'm sure people will. It's hard to say. A lot of people are going to be resistant, and a lot of people are going to be just the opposite.
Mm-hmm. All right, we've got a break coming up here in about 15 seconds or so, maybe a little bit less. And when we come back from this break, I want us to get into some of the photographs that you sent me, and we'll start talking about those a little bit. I may come back to this angel thing. Now, I'm interested in that. All right, we'll be back, folks, right after this, so don't go away. We'll be right back. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show and my guest, Christine Dickey. Christine, we were talking about the possibility of some sort of unambiguous landings in the Middle East.
Mm-hmm.
You say this is supposed to happen next year. Or actually, let me be clear about this. And let me explain why, both to you and the audience. There's a difference when someone says, I think this, or I believe this, or this is my opinion. There's a big difference between that and them saying, this is it. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And every single show where someone says, well, I think it's this, or to the best of my knowledge and so forth, it's my opinion that it's going to be this. I'll get email where people say, well, you know, this person is claiming this and that. No, they're not claiming anything. When you claim something, that's an open assertion. Okay? You're saying, this is it. And what Christine says is that she has a friend who's into Bible codes who has told her this. But let's talk about it, Christine.
Okay.
The friend who is into Bible codes, mm-hmm, has told you there's going to be landings starting in the Middle East, starting this next year. I presume we're talking about 2010.
Yes.
Okay, so in 2010 is when it's supposed to be. And does he know, he or she, know who these beings are?
He claims it's the Anunnaki. And according to Zechariah Sitchin, there, I believe Nibiru is not slated to come back into our area of the solar system for another 150 years. But landings and travel can occur, of course, now, right now, in preparation for that.
All right. Are the Anunnaki supposed to be the good guys or bad guys?
Well, I guess that all depends on your point of view.
Okay.
In my case, I don't have a problem with them. A lot of people do. Because we were created as a slave race for them, a lot of people have an objection to their coming back and for whatever reason, whether they're going to start mining gold again or using people. I think I have no problem with cooperating with them. A lot of people do.
Well, let me ask you this. Are you aware of the fact that even Genesis says that's why we were created?
Absolutely. Yeah.
It says that the Lord God looked around and said, you know, there's no man to till the ground, to dig the ground is what it actually says.
Right.
There's nobody to dig the ground. There was already humans. There were already humans, according to Genesis. That happened,
yeah,
on day six, and you had male and female, but it wasn't Adam and Eve. Adam is created after day seven, and it's because there's no man to dig the ground, to till the ground.
Mm-hmm.
Those first humans were not smart enough to teach technology to.
That's right.
All right, and so it says that he was created for that purpose, and then a garden got planted, and after the garden grew up, then he got put into the garden. Then he had to name all the animals, and when he gets put into the garden, it says again, he was put into the garden to dress it and to keep it. He was put there as a farmer. Okay, little different story, but the concept is the same, and that is that the reason he got created is as a worker race.
Yes, to work for or worship actually means to work for.
Mm-hmm.
So we are to work for God, exactly.
And so the concept that we are a worker race, for anyone who is religious, whether it's Judaism, whether it is Christianity or Islam, it's all there in the founding documents that's why we got created. We were a worker race. So I don't know that it really that should bother anybody. I think it will, but I don't think it should.
Well, we're pretty independent, a lot of us, and we don't like being told what to do.
That's true.
We better get used to it.
So what you think, I'm just asking, it's speculation, I know that, but I'm just asking what you think about this. Provided that what this person has told you about the Bible codes, provided that's accurate, and I don't know if it is, but provided that it is. Okay. Provided that it is, and the Anunnaki show up, are they going to be ordering us around and telling us what to do and making us do it?
Well, I think the first thing they're going to do is give people a choice, who is going to be with them and who is not.
Mm-hmm.
There'll be a separation there of the people for and the people against. I don't know what they're planning on doing with the people who are not going to cooperate. I can guess, and I wouldn't want to say that on the air.
Mm-hmm.
But there's going to be enough people that will want to cooperate to do what needs to be done. There's a lot of work ahead of us.
All right. Do you see this as a good thing, a positive thing?
Well, if we stop and look at what's going on now with the economy and with the wars and the way we treat each other, and we've got children starving in Africa that shouldn't be starving. We've got people over here that are billionaires, multi-billionaires, and you've got people over on the other side that are starving to death. I mean, there's something wrong there.
We've got people right here in this country that are starving to death.
Absolutely, absolutely, mm-hmm. Everywhere, yes. And it doesn't have to be.
And I don't think it will be for a whole lot longer.
No.
Yeah. Okay, I want us to move on now to the photographs. You've okay. sent me some photographs, and actually, I want to make clear again that you're not making claims about these photographs. You've got some weird stuff in the sky,
yeah.
And you're saying basically, what the heck is this?
Mm-hmm.
And I'll let you explain all of that to us as we go. I don't know if you are where you can see a computer monitor and where you can see what I'm putting on the screen. So
I'm looking at I've got your site up, and I don't know where the photos are going to come up at.
Okay.
Let me see here.
Well, click on where it says Mac.
All right, we'll click on Mac and see what happens.
Now, what I've got here is, I may not have these in the order that you would prefer, but this is pretty interesting. There are some little dots, and so that everyone can understand, we're looking at a night sky. Looks like it's up over above a subdivision.
Yes.
And what we're seeing, you see little orangish kind of yellowish dots, and then there's a white line from that dot to a blow up of what that dot looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so each of these has a you've got a little dot, and then you've got it zoomed in so that we can see what those dots look like, and they're sort of mushroom shaped.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And it looks like some sort of energy or something underneath each one of them.
Right. Now, I've had that. I have some scientists working on that. Now, you had Will Allen on the other night, and I was actually sending this photograph to Will. And he was very excited about it at first. And then he said, well, if you copy and crop that section of the photograph along those objects, flip it over 180 degrees and bring it down over the street lights that you see below, you'll get those to line up. Actually, when I copy and crop the whole section across the top of the photo, flip it over and bring it down, and you draw a center line between what would be the cap of the mushroom down through that plasma tail, draw a straight line through that tail, and it doesn't line up completely. So I have to.
What is the what's the one at the very top has a blue light under it? What's that deal?
Well, Will was telling me that he thought that actually those blue lights were UFOs, and if I understood him correctly. So I don't know what that is, to be honest with you. I can only assume it's some kind of object sitting in front of that that light. Now, there's some question as to whether these are unknown objects, or are they in fact lens flares? I've had several people look at them and say they don't look like any kind of lens flare that they've ever seen, and I kind of agree with that. In the fact that they're not the same color as the lights below, they're not the same size, they don't line up perfectly, and the fact that when I took this picture, I saw something in that direction that looked like a fuzzy comet, and that's why I took that photo. Because I told my husband, there's something up there. Can you see that? And I think you did too, didn't you, Paul? And he saw it also. Mm-hmm. But we couldn't make it out with the naked eye very well. But when I took that photo and brought it back in the house and downloaded it on the computer, we had these objects. Now, all night long, I took several photos, and we got anywhere from one to six of those objects at a time. They were, like, all over the place.
All right, now,
I have never seen them before, and I haven't seen them since.
What part of the country was this taken in?
Well, this wasn't taken in Casa Grande, just below Phoenix.
Okay. Now, I'm going to put one up here that is really odd. I can't tell what this is. It looks like one of those Rorschach ink blot tests.
Yeah.
What is that?
Well, hold on. I don't see it yet.
Big splotch of color, yellow and red.
Oh, yeah.
And
that's my little fish. No,
okay.
I don't know. Now, that was taken with an HP 6 megapixel camera. That's what I had to work with initially back in September. And what you have here is, now, this little camera I have was actually photographing part of the infrared spectrum, and I was getting a lot of these objects. Now, this one looks like it has eyes on it. You've got one bulging eye on the left side of the photo, and then you can see that little black dot with the green around it on
yep.
the right side, and it looks like two eyes that are moving independent of each other. Now, I don't know what to call these things. I have to refer to the book of Trevor Constable, The Cosmic Code, where he talks about these living things that are in our atmosphere. I don't know what they are, but they are in the infrared spectrum.
All right, let's take a look at another one.
Yeah.
Now, this one, it looks like the first one that, if the first one was a water balloon, that it just got hit.
Let me tell you what you're looking at here. Now, this object is what you see, the yellow and green, is plasma surrounding an object of some kind, and around this object are holes all the way around, and out of these holes comes a spinning red plasma in a vortex field. You see how it spins?
Mm-hmm. And this was taken,
spinning.
These were taken also over Casa Grande?
Same, right in my backyard, yeah.
All right. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey, and we're talking about some really odd things that she's photographed in the skies above Casa Grande. Actually, I usually say Casa Grande, but I'm not sure how. Do you guys say Casa Grande or Casa Grande, or how do you say it?
Well, I say Casa Grande.
Well, you say it right then. This is a town that is just to the southeast of Phoenix. You get on Interstate 10 and you head east, and it's just, I mean, right at the doorway of Phoenix. And this entire area, the Phoenix area, in fact, the whole corridor, Phoenix down to Tucson, that whole corridor just sees stuff in the skies all the time. And Christine has photographed some of this strange stuff. Now, we were taking a look at some of the pictures, and we were looking at this one that you said is like plasma vortexes coming, or vortices coming out of the holes in this object. Now, could you see this with your naked eye?
No, you could not. And like I said, what I actually learned to do this kind of photography from a lady in the Needles area who was photographing objects every night also. And she was one of my research cases that I was working on.
Mm-hmm.
And she was getting photos of UFOs in the daytime and at nighttime. And she would get these orbs, and I'm not real big into orbs, but when I started photographing, I would start getting these little things. I don't know how big they are. I don't know how far away they are, because when you're shooting into the sky at night, you don't have anything to compare to. Or, you know, you don't know the size, you don't know how big these things are, or how small they are.
All right. This one appears to be a daytime photo, and
no, actually, it's a nighttime photo.
Is it?
Oh well, let me rephrase that. This was taken. Now, if there's another photo that you have of a thunderstorm with a insert of a enlargement of a UFO, we took that photo. I actually had Ron Nussbeck working on that photo with the PPP process. That one. There you go. If you look at that UFO, you'll see that it has windows around it.
Yeah, up at the top.
Yes. And Ron said that he could take this photo and they could enlarge it without losing definition so that they could actually see through those windows. And I thought, well, gee, if they can do that, maybe I can do that. So the middle window, just to the where the arrow comes down, just to the left of there, that window right in the middle, I tried enlarging it, and I worked on it for hours, and I couldn't get a clear anything. And so I went to bed one night about, must have been 12:30, and of course, with that on my mind, I started dreaming about that, and I got to tell you, I had a visit from somebody who was telling me how to enlarge that window so that I could get a face out of it, and I jumped up at 2:30 in the morning, and I told my husband, I know how to do it. I went to the computer, I used my photo filter program, and then go back to the face, and this is what I got.
Okay, so this is a face that was in the window?
Yeah, can you go back to that face?
Oh, I already have. You just haven't gotten there yet.
Oh, okay. I'm waiting. There we go. Okay, now what you see here, of course, you see the two eyes.
Mm-hmm.
Just above the eyes, you see a notch kind of in the middle.
Mm-hmm.
What he had on, now, this got washed out a lot in the lightning when had to lighten the picture up so that you could see the face because it was very dark, that he was actually wearing a wide-brimmed hat, and the goggles were actually part of the hat. It's hard to describe. It was like part of the brim, and he actually had the goggles raised up on his forehead so that you could see his eyes. Now, across the bridge of the nose is a shadow. Goes all the way across the front of his face, across the bridge of the nose, and you can sort of see the shadow coming down over, you can see the right side of the photo, which is the left side of his face.
Mm-hmm.
That shadow comes down and then goes all over, on the other side it comes down. The nose looks very dark because it's pressed up against a semi-transparent port or possibly an oxygen mask of some kind. But you can see his cheek very clearly. Below his nose, where the upper lip should be, is actually a mustache coming down and curling around the upper lip. It's almost like a handlebar mustache. The chin has a small beard on it. And just to the left of his chin, there's something that kind of sticks out there funny, and that's actually a microphone. So you have this face of a pilot that came out of that window. I don't know how I did that. I probably could not repeat it if I tried again. But he's very light-skinned, looks apparently like he has blonde hair, or that's something coming off his hat in the back. I think it's hair, but my husband thinks it's an extension of his hat that covers the back of his head.
Now, I can see all of the things that you're talking about.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm absolutely certain that when we open the telephone, you're going to have some callers who are going to say, I don't see it, I think it's just your imagination. What do you say to that?
Well, to each his own, but, you know, I have worked with this for a very long time. I've had a lot of hours to really study it. And unless you have time to really study this this photo, you know, And everybody sees something different,
mm-hmm.
And that's fine. But for me, I got to tell you, he looks exactly like the ET that I saw in 1981.
And you're
exactly
saying
exactly what the face looked like.
And you got this out of that window, in
mm-hmm.
that yeah. Now the thunderstorm where you have a UFO, could you see that UFO with the naked eye?
Actually, there were several in that photo. That was the only one that really came out clear. And no, mm-hmm. I couldn't see. There was so much lightning flashing that you couldn't really look into the there was a vicious storm that night, and you couldn't look into the cloud. I mean, you could squint,
mm-hmm.
so it was very hard to see with your eye. I was trying to photograph the lightning,
mm-hmm.
not any UFOs.
Were you surprised then when you took a look at this photograph and saw something there?
Oh, yeah, I was mm-hmm. just, like, amazed when I took this photo in and we enlarged it and saw. There was actually about, how many craft were in there? About 10? There was about 10 craft in there, and most of them were camouflaged. You could see the outlines of them, but they were camouflaged from the clouds.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So there was quite a few of them zipping around up there.
When was this thunderstorm?
It was September 10th of 2008.
You know, that might be the one that took us down. We just had a hellacious thunderstorm. And lightning. It was really a lightning storm more than it was a thunderstorm. Not a whole lot of anything but lightning. Some rain, but mainly lightning. And it took out our internet and took out some of my equipment.
That was one heck of a storm.
Yeah, if this is the same one, it was one heck of a storm.
Yeah.
It really was. It was an electrical storm like I've never seen before. So,
let me tell you a little bit about that UFO. Now, Ron Nusbeck has applied the PPP to that photo, and he has actually produced a number of unusual creatures out of that photo. And when I first started seeing what he was producing, I was very I didn't like what I was seeing, and I've got a call coming in, but I was very upset about what he was coming up with at first.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I stopped talking to him about this because I was just so resistant to some of these creatures that he was coming up with. Well, He was on another radio show the other night, and I listened to him. And actually, he started making a lot of sense. He called this UFO an ARC, and that makes perfect sense to me now because my degree was in veterinary sciences.
Christine, we have to take a break, and we'll be back right after this, folks. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey, and many of you are familiar with her through her writings and some other activities that you may be familiar with. But Christine is sharing with us some really pretty strange happenings in the skies, not far from Phoenix, Arizona. She's in Casa Grande, just to the southeast of the Phoenix, Arizona area. Actually, approximately 45 minutes drive from where I'm seated right now, so it's not far. And you've heard me say that there are strange things in the skies in this area. People see them, people photograph them, and it's almost so common that people are not very surprised by them anymore. But Christine, when we cut away for break, you were saying that you were seeing some creatures in the photographs that were done by Ron Nussbeck. Actually, you did the photographs. He did the PPP processing and enlargement. And you were seeing some things you said that were disturbing to you. Why?
Oh, yeah. Like what? Well, he was producing, at first he was getting images of humanoid-looking people, and then we started getting images of reptilian creatures and gray-type aliens, and also some little weird little plants. And I thought that was just really bizarre, mm-hmm. but then. I just had to put it aside and let it go and let it digest for a while. And then Ron was explaining that this UFO was a type of ARC, he called it. And I thought, well, that makes sense because my degree is in veterinary sciences. And when I graduated from college, and I've always talked to ETs, and I said, you know, if I can ever help you guys with your animals, you know, I'm here. So it's no wonder they show up with a UFO full of animals. It makes perfect sense.
So you think these are animals from some other part of the universe?
Well, Ron suggested that maybe they're endangered species from elsewhere, and maybe they need help with these. I don't know why they would need my help unless it was just to clean up after them. But other than that, there's so many possibilities there. You know, we could probably talk about it for hours, but maybe they're saving these these creatures from extinction. I don't know.
Well, you know, we keep every year we find things that the scientists say that you know, this is a whole new species we didn't know existed. And, you know, I have wondered, is it something that's been here for a long time, or is it something that just recently got dropped off?
Mm-hmm. Could be.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could be bringing these animals here. I don't know.
There is another photograph I want us to look at now before, before we move to opening the telephone lines for everybody. And this one sort of looks like somebody's hat that's all lit up, and it has kind of a blue aura around it.
Yeah.
And it's just shaped like kind of like a hat, but it's white, glowing. Tell us about this one. What is this one?
Well, Well, that was an object that I actually saw with my eyes at 2:30 in the morning around the 11th or 12th of September. I can't remember exactly. But I was looking at this object, and I thought, I didn't have my camera. I ran in, got my camera, and took a picture of this object just before it disappeared. And the
now to your
I'm
eye,
being told is...
Well, to your eye, did it look like that?
Excuse me?
To your eye, did it look like this, like a white blob of light?
Yes. It looked just like you see on screen. It was close enough that I could make it out in detail.
Mm-hmm.
And it looked like, it was an object with a dome, obviously, on it. And if you look on the left brim of that, you'll see some yellow and a little bit of red there.
Yeah.
And I have a theory about what it's doing there. I think they can go from the visible to the invisible stage,
mm-hmm.
Or state. And that's what I think, and that's what I think the UFO did in 1981 also. It went from the visible state into the invisible or cloaked state, where they can't be seen anymore.
So this one, how big is it?
Well, I don't know. It was actually quite large. I would guess it was probably close to 100 feet across.
And how far away from it were you?
Probably couldn't have been that far. It must have been maybe 1,000 feet away.
Okay, and how high up was it?
And it wasn't that high. It was probably less than 45 degrees, maybe at 35 degrees.
Okay. So at 800 to 1,000 feet, maybe.
800 to 1,000 feet.
Up. If it's 1,000 feet out and 35 degrees.
800 to 1,000 feet, yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Right.
All right. Tell you what we're going to do. We're going to open up the telephone line so that folks can call, and if they have a question or if they have a comment, we want them to have the opportunity to give us a call and ask you their question or make their comment.
Okay.
And it comes as no surprise to me that we have a call coming in. However, we don't accept anonymous telephone calls, all right? So if you have your caller ID blocked, it won't get through to us, okay? And let's go to the telephone line, if we can get that to answer. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. If you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling?
Yes, this is Kevin. I don't know if you can hear me well on this phone. I'm back in North Bay.
Yeah, you're down in the bottom of a barrel, but I think we've got you.
Okay, you got me. Okay, I'm going to have to talk. I'll talk a little bit louder there so you guys can hear me. Christina, there's really only, out of all the photos that I've seen so far tonight, there's only really one that I'm very convinced is an alien craft. Kev, do you think you could post the first photo about the ones with the plasma ones, the first one you showed tonight? I want to see if I can see them on the screen here.
Let me see if I can find that one again. Okay. And it's up. Talk about it. Even if you can't see it, talk about it. There's a delay.
Yeah, well, those ones look pretty much like the typical flying disc UFOs. But it seems to me that that's when it looks like when they're they're transforming from physical to energy. You know what I mean? So that they can travel at light speeds and whatnot. Because I understand that to be able to travel at supersonic speeds or to travel into warp speed, they got to use energy forms to change themselves from matter to light and whatnot, and I think that's exactly what we're seeing here.
Well, let's find out. Did they disappear at light speed, or did... Well, actually, you didn't even see them with your eye, did you?
No, all you could see, the largest object appeared as just a fuzzy glob out there. You couldn't really tell any detail. You couldn't really see. And so I aimed the camera in that direction and just started clicking away because actually I was getting these objects all over the place that night. I have about at least a dozen photos of anywhere from 1 to 6 of these objects in the sky at one time.
Yeah, and they also match the description of the craft that that Travis Walton claimed to have seen back in the 1970s. You know, you had
the
shape with the tentacles at the bottom type thing. It's exactly what it looks like.
All right. Any other question or comment?
No, that's all I've got to say. But I have to say the first photo is the most convincing of them all. Yeah, I think there is something there. Alien craft, definitely.
All right. Thanks for the call. All right. Now, I want to make clear that Christine has not claimed that these are alien craft. Am I right, Christine?
No, I have not.
And you're just saying, well, there's something really weird in my pictures here. I don't know exactly what it is, but it's weird.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Let me get the telephone number up on the screen for folks. And if you're interested in calling in and asking a question or making a comment, the telephone number for you to call is 623-237-3814. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling? Hello, caller. All right, the caller is not with us. And if you're watching, you can see that it is on your screen, the telephone number. It is 623-237-3814. And we are wide open for your calls. Now, you've shown these photographs to a number of people. Am I correct, Christine?
I have, yes.
All right, let's take this call, and we'll see where this goes. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
This is Rick from Kentucky, Kevin. I had a question about the type of camera equipment she uses.
Well, hang on just a minute. The telephone system is going nuts. It's supposed to be putting people on hold, and instead it's just beeping through. All right, this is Rick in Texas?
In Kentucky.
In Kentucky, okay. And, Rick, if you'll start your question or comment again, I would appreciate it.
Sure. I was wondering what type of camera equipment she was using, if they're digital cameras or 35-millimeter film cameras. And also, was this an optical zoom on the camera or a digital zoom?
Okay. What about that, Christine?
Okay, for the first photo you had up tonight with the five objects, that was taken with a Nikon D90, and of course that is digital, and that was not on Zoom.
Okay.
And what about the others?
And some of the others, I believe the rest of them were taken with a HP 6 megapixel handheld camera, and it's very difficult to get photos with that thing compared to the D90.
Okay. Rick, did you have another question or comment?
No, Kevin. I think that'll do me. I was just wondering about if they were digital or film. I probably put more confidence in film-type cameras than I would a digital zoomed at that length. But
yeah, but you know, let me say this about... Yeah, because we get into this a lot now because of the presence of digital. Digital is not as precise and as clear in most cases as film. However, film only responds to what's in the optical wavelength. And digital seems to be able to pick up things that are beyond our ability to see. And so if they're giving off some kind of near optical wavelength, but it's not quite what we can see, digital picks it up. And so there's been a big debate, and you bring up a good point. There's been a big debate both in the UFO field and in the field of paranormal investigation about should we use film or should we use digital. And what I say is you got them both, use them both.
Can I say something?
Sure.
Kevin, I sent you a photo also of there's a Venus and Jupiter.
Mm-hmm.
And I sent you that photo because of the controversy of digital versus film. And I have been told by people that you cannot get good detail with a digital camera.
Mm-hmm.
However, the photo that has Venus and Jupiter on it was taken by my friend Piper in Mojave Valley, and she thought she had a couple of UFOs. But what's really interesting about that photo is that when we enlarged Jupiter, you can actually see the red spot in the red band going around Jupiter with a digital camera, without a telescope, without zoom. I think she had it on zoom. I take that back. But she did not have a telescope. And so look at the detail you're looking at there with, taken with a digital camera of Jupiter. Of course, mm-hmm. Venus is on the bottom. Jupiter is the middle object and the one above. The other object on the left is Jupiter, NASA photo that we put in there for comparison. Now, the digital version of Jupiter is distorted in shape, but you see what I mean about the detail? You can still see the line, the red spot in the band going around Jupiter.
Yeah, I see that.
Yeah, and now that's incredible to...
We lost it.
500 plus million miles away. Look at the detail we're getting there.
It is incredible.
Yes.
It is. All right, let's go back to the telephone line, if we can get it to answer. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Yeah, this is Trey in Louisiana.
Hi, Trey.
Hi. I have to thank your guests for coming on tonight. These are some great pictures. And I wanted to ask her... I know, Kevin, you know a lot about the Bible, and it talks about wormwood in the Bible. Your buddy that decodes the Bible or whatever, has he ever mentioned to you about anything in the Bible talking about our solar system, kind of like, mentioning what's going on right now in our solar system, everything's heating up, and so on and so forth? Was there any codes in there talking about anything in the atmosphere, the solar system, and... And I was going to ask you, look, Kevin, you've got theology, doctrine of theology, I was going to say, if you could get somebody on here that was actually somebody who was a professional, Bible decoder, then you and that person and your guest also, I don't know, you have three people on at once, but I mean, that would be an incredible show because, having someone on here that actually is talking about the Bible in the right context, and then you talking about what the words actually say would be a tremendous show, as well as this one has been, too. But I'll hang up and listen off air.
All right. Thanks for the call.
All right.
Well, what about that? Your friend that does the Bible codes, has this friend said anything about Bible codes indicating anything strange going on in our solar system?
Boy, it's been a while since I've talked to him, but... He would be a great guest for you. He's a PhD. He's in California, and he's done a lot of crop circle research, and also now he's into Bible code research, and actually the two tie in together. So, but now
I'm not accepted, and I have a PhD. I'm not accepted in the ranks of doctors too often because I say PhD stands for piled higher and deeper. and I don't put too much stock at all in having more degrees than a circle. Some of the smartest people I've ever met had no degrees at all, and some of the really dumbest people I ever met had so many degrees you'd think they were a thermometer.
Touché.
So to me that's not much of a credential, but. If he knows something about Bible codes, some PhDs are smart in spite of their PhD, and some THDs are as well. And if he knows something about Bible codes, I certainly would be interested in having him.
I have the Bible code program that he has here also, and the Bible code. Program is not infallible. Of course, when we applied it to the presidential election recently, we got both Obama and McCain as coming out winners. So that was a real tough test.
Well, in a way, they both came out winners. Obama won the election, and McCain won the opportunity to not have to have the headaches of being president.
Yeah.
And it's a headache. It's a headache right now. Yeah. All right, let's go to the phone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, this is Bob from California.
Hi, Bob.
Hi, I just had a quick question for the guest.
Okay, I don't know if she can hear you. Christine, can you hear Bob?
I can.
Okay.
Okay, when you took the photos of the UFOs, were you scared? What feelings did you have? And where do you think they came from? And do you think they're benevolent? I'll hang up now.
Honestly, I have never been afraid of UFOs. I'm not afraid to be contacted. I want to make that perfectly clear. I think they're initially, you know, the surprise, I would be surprised, but then I would settle right in. Because when I was contacted in 1981, I was not afraid.
So if one shows up tonight, you're not afraid?
No. And I was, I got to tell you, I wanted to climb out of that truck and I wanted to go up to that thing. I wanted to shake their hand, you know. But my friend stopped me, so I didn't do that. But obviously, ultimately, we did go inside.
Okay. Let's see if we can bring this call on. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Don calling from Phoenix.
Don, you sound like you left the state, man. We can't hear you.
I'm sorry. Yeah, I can barely hear you, too.
All right, hang on. We're going to turn the phone all the way up. Try it now.
Hi, can you hear me okay now?
Yes, we can.
Hi, Christine.
Hi.
This is Don from the Alien Secret News.
Oh, it's good to talk to you finally.
Yeah. Christine and I talked a little bit about that first photograph you showed, Kevin, and I've got to say she is open to the idea that it can be something other than UFOs. I sent you a copy, Kevin, of that photo that I also sent Christine, where taking the top part of the photograph and inverting it 180 degrees, how the critics were using that point, saying everything was lining up there where it looked like lens flare. Where I can see what they're talking about, I still don't see the lens flare because, as you know, I'm a former photographer, and I've never seen lens flare like that.
Yeah, I'm not a photographer, but I do a lot of it. And, I mean, I'm not a pro, but I do lots of it. And it doesn't look like a lens flare to me. But I could be wrong. Now, this is where we get email where they say, well, you claimed it was not a lens flare. No.
Oh, yeah, I'm not claiming anything. I'm saying it's a possibility because, you know, since I've done photography, it's been years since I put down my equipment. Everything's digital now, and I have not really worked with digital equipment. And some of the, like I was explaining to Christine, some of the optics they got out now are very cheap, low-quality optics, so no telling what these optics can do, you know, what type of reflections or refractions they can produce.
That's true. Hey, listen, Don, we are about 24, 23, 22 seconds away from break.
Okay, Kevin. Nice talking to you, Christine.
Nice talking to you, Don.
Thanks for the call. All right, we will open up the telephone lines again when we come back from break. I will say this, I am aware of the fact that a lot of you are trying to get in, and the telephone system is working, it's just working slow tonight. But you keep trying, and we'll get you in. The system's on a computer, it answers and puts people on hold and puts you on rotation and so forth, and it's just moving a little slow tonight. I guess it's a little bit like its owner. It's getting older. All right, we'll be back right after this. And welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. My guest this evening is Christine Dickey. And we're talking about some of the strange things that she has photographed in the skies primarily above Casa Grande, where she lives, just outside of Phoenix area. And telephone line is open. For those of you who have been trying to call in, now's a good time to give it a whirl. We've been getting lots of folks trying to call in, and the telephone system is just moving a little bit slow for you. I apologize for that. We'll reboot it after the show and see if we can speed it back up for tomorrow night. Quick announcement here. It is true that some of the music that you hear on this show comes from the independent artists at GarageBand.com. It is also true that some of it comes from music.podshow.com. Go to those sites and enjoy the independent artists and their music, and you can even buy their CDs there. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Kevin, this is Brent from Wyoming. How you doing?
Hi, Brent. I just watched you on my screen here.
I know. I have two quick questions for Christine.
All right.
Christine, your husband's name is Paul, right?
Yes.
He wouldn't happen to be from Buffalo, would he?
No.
No, okay, because there's a Paul Dickey from Buffalo, Wyoming.
No.
Anyway, the question I have is, when were you going across I-80? That was, or was it busy? Because that corridor is notoriously busy, 24/7.
There was at least one semi-truck that I remember, and there were several cars on both sides of the freeway.
Do you know if any of them saw it?
Well, they were all stopped. I know that. They weren't moving. Either they saw what was taking place, I'm sure they had to, or, you know, you heard of the cases where people are just sitting in their cars and they're, like, frozen. I don't know if that happened, or nobody got out of their vehicle that I could see.
Okay, that's just what I was wondering, for one of those situations or what? Okay, thanks.
All right, thanks for the call. All right. So there were other cars, and they were stopped.
Mm-hmm.
Did your car engine stop on its own, or did it continue to function?
No, actually, when we saw the objects, and as soon as that center one started coming at us, we jerked the car over, jerked the truck over to the shoulder and stopped.
Mm-hmm. And was it frightening for the guy that was doing the driving?
No, like I said, Pat had ongoing contact for quite a while up to that point. And now he owned a 5,000-acre ranch northeast of Laramie towards Wheatland. And he had a lot of cows mutilated on his ranch from about 1978, maybe 75 until 1980, 81.
All right. He's had all these contacts with extraterrestrials.
Right. They were landing and actually getting out and talking with him.
What did they say about the cattle mutilations? Did they take credit for it?
Well, basically, they were conducting the cattle mutilations, and from the first when I approached Pat about it and asked him why they were doing it, he gave me some silly answer like, so that we know they were here or something like that. And I said, well, that doesn't make sense. They could do it a lot better way than butchering cows, you know. But then when he opened up to me finally, he started telling me that they were testing the cows, because you have to realize a lot of his cows came from Rocky Flats, a nuclear plant in Golden, Colorado, and they were actually testing the cows for radiation levels.
And what were they going to do if these cows had very high radiation levels?
Well, they weren't going to do anything. I mean, they were testing the cows. Basically, they're testing the cows to see, because, yeah, you know, our basic diet, of course, in the United States is meat and potatoes. They want to know how it's affecting us as a species. They're still concerned about us as a species and their creation. And then I want to bring up, too, that one of the largest potato farms in the United States, in Idaho, is on the border of Idaho Nuclear Energy Research Laboratories. Now think about that for a moment.
So are you saying that those potatoes have some type of radiation in them?
Well, it, you know, anytime you're, I think the possibility is there. I don't have answers, and I wouldn't make that statement on the radio, but it's always a possibility.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's go to the telephone. Caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. If you will, tell us your first name and from where are you calling?
I think I did.
Okay, caller, are you still there?
Hello?
Your first name and from where are you calling?
Cut me off.
Okay.
Hey there.
Yeah, I'm here. We can hear you saying he cut me off.
Oh, are you there?
Can you hear me?
I can now, yeah.
Okay. All right, let's go to the phone line and try this again. And caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hi, Kevin. This is Ryan in Washington.
Yeah, Ryan.
Yeah, I was wondering, do you think that the weather conditions in Phoenix are what attracts some of these UFOs? I hear Kevin say that it's kind of like living in South Hell.
North. It's North Hell.
North Hell.
Yeah, living in the Phoenix area in the summer is like living in North Hell.
Right.
Yeah.
I was curious. I was thinking possibly that there's so many sightings in that area, it seems like,
mm-hmm.
such a hotbed for activity, that the weather conditions there must be similar to what these extraterrestrial or these aliens are on their home planet. They feel comfortable in that area.
Well, it could
be. The
other
thing is, you know, these cattle mutilations are pretty amazing because, you know, the price of one cattle is so devastating to any rancher. Mm-hmm. It's like very unlikely that anybody would want to, you know, I mean, I can't think of any other explanation besides for the cattle mutilations, because who would want to go out there just to, I mean, the cattle are so expensive, but I'll just take it off the air. Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. What do you think, Christine? Is it the weather out here in North Hell that has the UFOs interested in being here, or what? What do you think?
Well, I don't think they're just here. I think they're pretty much everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it just maybe we're paying attention here more. You know, certainly South America, Mexico, Central America are having hundreds and hundreds of UFO sightings every day. And I've got to tell you, April 4th of 08, coming back from Las Vegas over the Hoover Dam, coming back up on the Arizona side, we were about 20 minutes past the dam when I looked up into the sky, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing. I saw at least 100 UFOs above the cirrus clouds, I'm thinking about 35,000 feet, and they were so large that you could see each disc perfectly. And of course, looking from underneath, I think what I was seeing was their shadow blocked out, blocking the sun out, and they were all coming together in a kind of a circular pattern, but there were still a few trailing off, and they were headed towards our area of Nevada, if you get my drift, near
mm-hmm.
Las Vegas.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And you say there were about 100 of them?
There were at least 100, yes. Now, we took the size, I have the a manual here of a UFO organization, took the size in that manual that I the closest matched, and took their formula for estimating the size of these craft. These craft were at least 1,000 feet across.
Whoa.
So you had 100 of those at 1,000 feet across. We had some mass, and I wasn't the only one to have seen that. Now, that was reported by others, but it never made the papers. You never heard about it anywhere.
No, but I'm not surprised.
Mm-hmm.
You mean it was not...
It was never investigated, by the way.
Uh-huh. How would you investigate something like that?
Well, you would certainly take a report and at least talk to the person and get as many facts as you can. Like, I had to figure out the size of this craft and how far they were. I mean, I knew that the cirrus clouds are at least 25,000 feet,
mm-hmm.
25,000 to 30,000 feet, and that these were well above those clouds, so I could estimate then the size of the craft that were involved.
1,000 feet across,
at least
35,000 feet, mm-hmm. and there were 100 of them.
And that's I was not the only one to have seen them. Now, they were, another lady reported seeing them that day also.
And when you say reported them to who? She called the police or?
No, she reported them to a UFO organization.
Okay. And so she was somewhere in that same area?
She was probably on the same road I was.
Mm-hmm.
What is that, 93 that comes out of... 95. What is that road that goes into Kingman from the dam?
93, I believe.
93, okay. Mm-hmm. So it was on 93. And, of course, we were 20 minutes up on the Arizona side. And they were headed over towards Vegas, probably to Area 51, yeah.
All right, now let me ask you this. This is changing the subject, but before we get too far away from it, people mm-hmm. hear me say things like I said about living here in the summer is sort of like living in North Hell. Now, you're out here. Let me get some corroboration, or at least you can say it's not true. Is it true or not true?
About what?
About living out here in the summertime. It's like living in North Hell.
Well, you sure certainly stay inside a lot.
It gets hot, doesn't it?
It does.
Yeah. It gets very, very hot out here. I don't think that the weather is really what plays a part in this, because they show up in thunderstorms. They show up, people see them up in the northeast where it's snowing sometimes when they see
mm-hmm.
them. I don't think the weather plays a part. But there may be something, maybe the ley lines in the earth, the energy lines in the earth.
Electromagnetic lines,
mm-hmm.
yeah.
The largest intersection of ley lines in North America is at South Mountain.
Oh, my gosh. I hadn't heard that.
Yeah. Walter Bosley was with us, and he's got a map of all these ley lines. And do you know... Out at South Mountain, there is this, it's called Magic Castle or Mystery Castle or something like that. Right there under that castle is where all those ley lines intersect. We have to take a break. We'll be back right after this. Welcome back to the Kevin Smith Show. We're on Final Approach. Let me remind you, if you haven't joined, be sure you become a member of the Kevin Smith Show members area, because this coming Saturday night is the first Saturday night of February. That means I'll be in the chat room, and we'll just rock and roll for a couple of hours in there and have a great time. But you got to be a member to do that. Plus, all the K-Pods are in there. That's the podcast of all the shows. All right, and lots of other stuff, too. Okay, we're on Final Approach. We're talking with Christine Dickey. We've got time for one more call. So if you've been trying to get in, this would be a good time for you to hit those magic numbers and find your way onto the air here. The telephone number is 623-237-3814, 623-237-3814. Christine, what do you think all this means?
Well, I think, I really think that we're going to see a lot more UFOs. We're going to start having more contact, and I think eventually it's going to start becoming commonplace with people as far as the phenomenon, and it's not going to be frightening or strange. Or, and I think that once we start having open contact, we can start getting on with bigger and better things.
Okay. So you see this as a positive thing?
I do. I really do.
Would it surprise you to know that just a few minutes ago someone helped us out by knocking our video out?
Is that what happened?
Yeah. And I'm, you know, we get the whole thing on video capture.
Mm-hmm.
But someone just a few minutes ago helped us out by just knocking the video right off, and we'll reestablish contact with that right now. And it should be happening. Okay. Yeah, there we go. All right, so video is back up. We get a little help from our friends like that, people who absolutely don't believe in the Constitution, don't believe in freedom of speech, enemies of the state, actually, enemies of constitutional freedom, whoever they may be. Don't know who they are, but whoever they may be. So anyway, the video is back up, and to everyone who is just now getting video back online and you're saying, geez, what happened? Look, you know that right after the show, we load the video that we've captured up, and you can just go to the website, kevinsmithshow.com, and what will happen is you can click on the menu where it says Watch Latest Show, and you'll be able to see the whole thing. So we didn't lose anything. It's just the online stuff, and unfortunately, that's... That just goes with this territory sometimes. I got a Christine, I got an email from someone else who happens to do a talk show, and this person said it's happening to them too, so we're not alone. All right, caller, you're live on the Kevin Smith Show. Your first name and from where are you calling?
Hey, Kevin, this is Don again. Just give you the heads up. You lost more on your video, pal. You lost your audio, too. The music was just playing just up until a minute ago.
Okay. Well, it all should be back up now.
Yeah, it is. You went to commercial break, and I didn't think you were coming back.
Yep. Well, we had a little help from our friends, Don.
Yeah, I know how that goes.
Yeah.
Okay, bud.
Thanks for the call. It's not infrequent, but Christine, the other talk host, said that it happened to that talk host and to another friend that does a talk show, and
while I was talking to them.
Well, I don't know, but the question was, are we being targeted? Absolutely, we are.
Yeah.
Absolutely, there is no question about that. But the question is, who would do such a thing? Certainly not anybody sworn to uphold and defend the Constitution against all enemies, foreign and domestic. Certainly no one would do that.
Mm-hmm.
That would make them enemies of the state, enemies of Constitution, targets for prison, wouldn't it?
Well, unfortunately, certain people are above the law.
So they think. Okay. But look, hey, karma's real. What you plant, you get back. But if you plant one kernel of corn, you get a whole ear full of corn back. So whatever you do is coming up behind you with momentum, and it's either going to push you higher or run you down, depending on whether it was right or wrong. All right. Well, Christine, I tell you what, this has been fascinating. The photographs are compelling. I don't know what to say about them. I certainly can see that there are things in the sky. I don't know what they are. And I think you're doing the right thing by sharing them, but also doing the right thing by saying that you don't know what they are and you're having them analyzed.
Right. They're exciting to capture. They're fun to download and speculate what you're looking at. The possibilities are endless.
You're having these photographs analyzed by a number of processes. Do you think you're going to be able to determine what they are?
Well, of course, I've had consultants from NASA look at these photos, which basically they keep telling me it's lens flares, it's dirt. Mm-hmm. That's as much as they'll say. I have independent people looking at the photos, which are which these people are more honest, I think, in their analysis. And some people will tell you exactly what they see, and that includes that these objects are do have plasma, do contain plasma. They do have electromagnetic fields around them. And also, as far as lens flare, now you have to realize I get a lot of lens flare, and I know what lens flare is. And basically, these objects, especially the one you showed tonight, the multiple objects, are not the same color as the street lights below. They're not the same size, and they appear to be at varying distances from the camera.
Well, here's another thing. Lens flare generally occurs at the focal point. So you might get one, but you wouldn't get five or six.
Right, right.
So it will occur at the focal point of the lens, and you're not going to get it in a whole bunch of different places. Right. Not simultaneously.
Let me say this too. I'm not a photographer by any means. I just started doing this in September. I'm not educated as far as this Nikon D90. Now you go from a throwaway camera to something like that's completely computerized, and you're tackling quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm taking these photos to Nikon to have them analyzed.
Outstanding. So will you keep us posted?
Japan is not bound by our constitution, our laws, or our agendas.
Mm-hmm.
And hopefully they'll give me an honest opinion.
And will you keep us posted on that?
I will. I will, absolutely.
Okay. Well, that's outstanding, and I'm looking forward to that. Now, do you have a website, or do we need to go to Alien Seeker News to read your articles?
Yeah, Alien Seeker News pretty much has all my stuff up on there, and I don't have a website. I don't anticipate doing that yet. I might at some point, because I am putting together a book.
Mm-hmm.
With all the photos and the explanations for each one, when they were taking the catalog numbers, so on and so forth.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be a full color book on these photos, so it should be quite interesting.
All right. Well, I want to thank you for being with us. Stay on the line with me for a moment, if you will, as I close the show out. Ladies and gentlemen, that's it. That's a wrap for tonight. I'm glad you were here, and I was glad to be here. And I hope you'll be back tomorrow night. My friends call me Steel Eye. My enemies do too. You can call me whatever you want to call me. Just keep coming back again and again and again. Until next time. So long, everybody.